Yes, sir. Once again, it is that time of the. It is that time of the week. The K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio. It is 8 p.m. on Wednesday, the 10th of February, 2016. I am the Sun, also known as Eric Payne, and you are, lady.
K Thompson Payne, the mother of Eric Payne. Let's get on with the show here. Well, happy birthday.
Thank
you. Have a birthday coming up in 2 days, right?
Right, that's correct. I was hoping it's premature, but you said 2 days.
We won't talk about age, because then I would be revealing my own. But really, what's on tap for today? What do you have?
Well,
hot topics.
Right.
We're going to be talking about the debate, but, you know, the people involved with the debate again. Then Bernie Sanders, you know, going strong. Chris Christie getting out of the race. Trump is leading. I don't understand that. But anyway, he is, you know, he is the boy of the hour, boy, man, boy. Anyway, but that's what's going on. And we're going to be talking about that in length. And then later on, going to be talking about Glenda Taylor's book, The Jalamoussos Drum. I've mentioned Glenda before. She is a good friend. She is a writer. She is one of the most brilliant women that I have ever talked to. And we're going to be discussing the things in Jalamoussos Drum, and I'll tell you later on during the program what a Jalamousso is.
And that's good. And here we are welcoming our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman.
Yay!
Hey! Good evening. How's everybody?
Yeah, good, good. Going crazy because the snow is still here.
Oh, okay. Well, I tell you, I was concerned because when I dialed in, I was told that there was no programming for 24 hours. But I said, maybe I dialed the wrong number or something. I don't know.
Yeah. We. I just had to enter in the information, but that's how they do. So, you know, we're discussing, what do you think about the primaries, Wayne? You know, we got your boy Don Trump won the New Hampshire primary, and he's a... even more full of it.
I think the highlight of the primary is the suspension of Chris Christie. I think he came in and did what he had to do to knock Rubio out the way, which I thought was, you know, effective on his part. But
yep.
The fact that he didn't draw any flies and it led to his debacle today, you know, speaks volumes. I still don't understand Donald Trump's popularity, but John Kasich, I've always had my eye on him, and he's the most moderate of everyone. And he's not bombastic and braggadocious like Trump and Christie. And I think that's what was Christie's downfall, the fact that, you know, he's flippant. He's got this... forgive the expression, mafia-style attitude, and, you know, and then his baggage from Jersey, regardless, people are watching that, even if they're in other states, you know? So he may talk a good game, but I think he just gave the party a one-up, you know, by blasting Rubio, and Rubio had to admit after today that it was his worst debate performance since the beginning of his campaign. You know,
uh-huh.
At first over the week he was defending himself, and now it is what it is. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens after this on the Republican side. Clinton and Sanders, there's no surprise there, and Hillary has her work cut out for her.
Yeah, she does. And also, Chris Christie is out of the game, I understand, as opposed to this, as we're referring to this race, you know. He has a lot of baggage. GWB, okay?
That's
the baggage here in Jersey that has gotten to the point where, you know, nobody's believing that he wasn't involved in that. So, you know, I mean, you know, it's really interesting information about how he's going to be continuing on. Also, there was a funny... I wanted to mention this the other day because, you know, I was watching Cory Booker, you know, and Cory Booker is
uh-huh.
a former mayor of New Jersey, and he is now the, what, Eric?
Senator from New Jersey.
Yeah. And he loved to introduce, I don't know who they were introducing, but he was standing next to Madeleine Albright. And Booker was so excited that he raised her hand, pulled up the Madeleine Albright's hand. Here he is. He must have forgotten that he was over, he's over 6 feet, and she almost was lifted off off her tiptoes. It was a funny scene, you know. It just happened. I noticed things like that. And he apparently was so excited that he didn't notice it. But anyway, so.
You must hear that. And on the side note, still on that point right there, you know, the thing about Cory Booker is when you meet him, he's a nice person. You hear about these, all these things, and he's not as pro his ethnic group as you would like. But, you know, in his defense, he is a very nice person when you meet him. I've met him, and he's a very nice guy. He's a suburban type of brother, if you know what I mean. So he kind of, I guess he kind of relates to other suburban brothers, but he's a nice
guy. Cold language there.
Well, yeah, it is.
cold.
And you picked it up very well, didn't you? And he's a nice guy. And one thing, just to finish this point about Cory, one thing about him, though, is that he ran for mayor of Newark, and a lot of people thought that he probably was going to be gone, that Newark was a stepping stone, which possibly can still be said now. But at least he didn't leave after one term.
Yeah.
And he stayed in there to try to do some things. I mean, you know, people might have take issue with the things that he did, but he at least stayed in there past one term, which really kind of, you know, takes away from someone being as self-serving as possible.
Right.
So, wanted to say that, but I want to get back to the primaries and the current issues.
Also, you know, I want to talk about Carson, who is there but not there.
Not there at all.
Yeah, you know, he's in some other world. I would have liked to have heard his wife speak, because somewhere along the line, someone was saying that she is quite a speaker and very intelligent.
Oh, she is.
I want to do some research on her. I do think that she would probably have added something to his campaign. But I mean, when you come on, you almost feel sorry for him. And here's a neurosurgeon, but he just can't get it. I don't know.
No.
Nice man, but you know.
We were talking. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
We were talking the other night, my mother and I, Wayne, and everybody else that might be listening, about Ben Carson. To me, he has really been unimpressive as a presidential candidate. And when you see someone, his mannerisms, his gestures, the whole kind of thing he does with his hands, when he flails his hands out to the side like that, and, you know, closing his eyes, it almost makes it seem like when somebody does that kind of body language, and I'm not a body language expert, I'm just kind of use my powers of observation that I've had to refine as being an actor, just watching people. But I'm sure that there are some body experts that would probably say, when you see someone doing some of the gestures that Ben Carson did, it, to me, at least anyway, this is Eric talking, to me, it suggested that he really, even though he was trying to act and speak, his words were trying to say that he knew what he was talking about, his body language to me suggested that he did know what he was talking about, the way he would flail his arms out and have them out to the side, almost like his elbows were stuck to the side, and he just had the kind of pterodactyl thing from Jurassic Park going, you know, those dinosaurs with short arms. You know, so, and I also wonder, after I began to hear him speak and talk and be ill-informed about really the issues at hand, I started to doubt his proficiency as a surgeon. I was like, is this guy really as good as everybody says? Because he's sure he's pretty stupid about all the rest of this stuff. So, you know, that's just my opinion. And apparently, it's really coming to light because he didn't do too much and he's been fizzling, and I predict he'll be one of the next ones to drop out of the race within the next two primaries. Jeb's not going anywhere because, you know, they try to steal elections.
It's going to be interesting. Not to cut you off, but it's going to be interesting to see, because at least if he goes south and he's headed to South Carolina, which is the next contest, you know, he's going to have an encounter with black folks. And that evangelical crowd, Carson's a Seventh-day Adventist, and you're absolutely right about his mannerisms. I mean, one would think he has issues of self-esteem. You know, he's not the public speaker, but his wife, I've seen in a number of interviews, and very forceful, very articulate, you know.
Really?
I mean, she's the Hillary Clinton to Bill. You know, Bill's got that almost, I hate to use the cold ghetto style of debating, but, I mean, he's articulate, but he has a certain flair about his story. You know, he's even, to a certain extent, all this nonsense about calling Sanders sexist, I think to a certain extent is working against Hillary. I think Bill should just stay home until it's near crunch time. But the bottom line is the opposite.
No, he shouldn't stay home because I want to say something else. Now, you know, Trump has really had somebody from the black community with him, traveling with him. Very exciting. I don't know if people have noticed, but it's Amoroso. Amoroso is from his apprenticeship show. So he's a black person there on the scene, you know. So, yes,
well,
he is.
I haven't seen much of her. I've seen her in some instances, but I know there's this black guy who looks a lot like our former colleague Fred Bunz, and he's always around Trump for some reason. In fact, I wanted to call Fred because I thought he had dropped out in the sun and signed up for the campaign. You know, he looks so much like this guy. But the bottom line is that Trump, I think, is going to take South Carolina, but it's going to be interesting to see who in the party sustains the momentum as they go south and to the west and all that. And
yeah,
I think Hillary
yeah.
will do better in South Carolina. But the fact that Sanders met with Sharpton today, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's Al's way of saying, well, we can't be taken for granted. But, you know, I guess he's just hedging his bets at this point, you know?
Listen, Al, as you and I know, Al has been around for a long, 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 long time, and I absolutely like what he's doing and what he stands for. Nice guy, very effective, you know, and he's powerful, you know. But also, you know, the black vote in South Carolina is going to be very interesting. You know, I keep thinking of the what you're going to do when they come for you, and then who shot the sheriff, you know, the Bob Marley thing. But anyway, it's going to be interesting in South Carolina now. Because the South Carolinians, especially the black community, they are powerful. I think we're in for a surprise with them.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Wayne.
No. The only thing I have to say to add to what Kay is saying is that I think it is going to be very interesting. The only thing that I wonder about is that, you know, Sanders is so convincing. Yeah, he does a coaching job and wanting to change the world, and reminded me a great deal of Barack Obama when he was running the first go-around about how he was going to change Washington. And my thing is that no one changes Washington. I mean, and I'm not saying that, you know, I don't agree with what he wants to do. You know, I would love to have free health care. I'd love to have a free education. I'd like to go back to school now, and I know it's going to cost more than my mortgage to do that. You know, I'd have to sell a home or two in order to, you know, I mean, I just think it's ridiculous. But it just saddens me that there is this perception that he could change everything. And the one thing I would say about Hillary, she has an outstanding resume. I mean, there's no way that you can compare, and the crap that she went through with those Republicans, I couldn't think of anyone better suited to take that post but her, you know? It's just unfortunate that they haven't effectively covered their tracks, and I don't think she is passionate when she speaks the way Sanders speaks. I don't know what it is. It's like,
I'll have to disagree on that, because if you saw her speech last night, I thought she was very passionate.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that what this will do, this test of her with Bernie will make her stronger by the time that we get into going towards the general. general election in November. It's my belief also that that type of campaign that her and Bernie are running, where they refuse to attack each other like the way the Republicans would, where they're supportive of each other's right to run, they're on the same, realize that they want the same things. They would go about it different ways. But I think it will work well for us as Democrats when we have Bernie raise the enthusiasm level. And if he's not the nominee, then for his excited base to go and support Hillary would be really something that we need to have going into this election, because everybody's going to need to come out. In terms of the Republicans, I think Donald Trump, you know, he's Donald Trump. He's making stuff happen. So what's the call-in? The call-in number, if anyone wants to call in, is 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906. As getting back to Trump is Donald Trump, and it's kind of interesting that he actually won the primary, but you know, what you were saying about Marco Rubio or Chris Christie cutting down Marco Rubio, first off, I think it's hilarious that Chris Christie has to drop out because he's such a blowhard. I call him Governor Blard, blowhard.
Yeah.
He's such a, you know, loudmouth all the time and try to be bullied.
Impressive.
Right,
yeah. So I think that it's kind of a double whammy, because I didn't see the debate. I'm going to watch the debate from the other night when Marco Rubio was doing that robotic kind of mantra talking about Barack Obama. And, I was just overhearing one of the MSNBC programs, one of the commentators, and she was saying, you know, that's that tactic that they use. Mm. If they repeat a lie over and over enough, you know, they'll try to make it into reality. You know, perception is reality a lot of times in our culture nowadays, because people don't read, they don't do the research, they just go kind of the broad stroke thing. So what he was trying to do...
You know, there's a historical precedent for that. Anybody who goes back to World War II and before, Adolf Hitler, his number two guy, Joseph Goebbels, was notorious for that kind of behavior. And that's where it stemmed from. You repeat it long and strong enough, you start believing it, and then it becomes factual.
Exactly. And that's not only something that Marco Rubio, that's a page of the Republican playbook that they've decided to adopt, going back to, even before Barack's election, whoever we had, John Kerry. Because you see how they cut him up with the swift vote. They swift voted him.
Right.
So they repeated a lie over and over, because George Bush ducked military service.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But somehow they made the war hero the coward, and they made the coward the war hero.
Thank you.
I mean, you gotta respect their gangster, to put it on a street level. You gotta respect their just cunningness to just lie straight face. Because now we got a guy running for president who's related to the two other worst presidents in history. Jeb is running for president. Actually, had the nerve to say that Barack Obama's presidency, the whole world was turned upside down because his brother was a good president. Now, we all know that his brother was an idiot. His brother might have been a nice guy, and he's an idiot. And also, too, after every Bush, if you go back in history, after Big George was president, after George W. was president, the United States had a deficit, a budget deficit. When Bill Clinton came in after Big George left office, the budget deficit, once they looked at the books, the budget deficit was actually worse than what's projected. And then Bill Clinton does all this work, builds it up to a surplus. The idiot son comes in, destroys the whole thing again.
And he brings the depression. Yeah.
But into damn near the depression on us, right? Now we get the brother coming, and he's going to try to fix his mouth. I got to give him props for having the nerve to run for president. After you had a brother who was the worst, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month. His brother drove the deficit up to $1.3 trillion, and here Barack drops it, and this guy's got the nerve to come back and speak and say his brother was a good friend. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. But this is what they do. If they repeat something over and over and over again, the people that they're talking to that only want to hear what they have to say, that really don't want to be educated, right? Because if they would read a book, they would see that their best bet is someone like it. someone like a Kasich or someone like a Bernie, if they're really talking about having the average person being able to have a decent way of life in the United States, then those were the people they would go for. But then they start going into their racism. They start going into their nationalism. So that's what these a lot of these people, they against themselves in many of the cases. You wanted to say, Mom?
I forgot what I was going to say. But, you know, what was I going to say? I don't know what I was going to say, really, because you took it over, and I was very involved with what you were saying, you know, but it's really true. But also, you know, before we go in a step further, you know, I want to just mention what I'm going to be talking about a little later on in the program, maybe about in 10 minutes. And Glenda Taylor, I've mentioned her name on the air many, many times, a good friend of mine, brilliant, brilliant woman. And she has written a book, and one of the books that she has written is The Jalamuso's Drum. And I have talked about this every time I get a chance to refer to it. And I'm going to be talking about who are the Jalamusos, because the Jalamusos are griots, and she's talking about women, and I want to get to that. But I want to finish this political conversation, you know, about, I remember the picture that comes into my head, this is what I wanted to say here, the picture that comes into my head about Bush, George, is when, World Trade Center, and he was sitting there, and he was just, you know, I guess he was in shock. But he had this blank look on his face because that had happened. Do you remember that picture?
I do.
Yeah.
My perspective, if I can say my perspective about that, is that, you know, I'm one of those people who's with Michael Moore on that. I think 9/11 was kind of an interesting job. And people, you know, whenever you talk about stuff like that, people want to act like, you know, you're crazy and this and that. But if you watch Fahrenheit 9/11 that Michael Moore did,
and
breaks it down. Secondly, if speaking of that, the way George Bush looked that day, to me, knowing that, the expression on his face was that the decision was made that was going to happen on his watch, and the expression on his face to me suggested that he was like those sons of so and so. They went and did it, and he maybe didn't want them to do that, but he was like looking at it like those so-and-sos, they did it, they got me. Because somebody else made a decision, this was going to happen. And because you remember World War II, there was a predicate. People, you know, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, you know, there was that thing that said, it's in history if you research it, and I forget where I heard the information or read the information, that they presented, they kept baiting, the United States kept baiting the Japanese, kept doing certain things to make them respond, so then we can go to war with them. So, because, you know, war is good for the economy, allegedly, and this and that. So, fast forward again, you come up with what they call a false flag or whatever that thing is, where you created a catastrophe or something, a reason to go to war that we initially started, but you call somebody to have to react. Then when they react, you say, oh, look at them, first strike, let's go get them. And so kind of that. It's kind of that thing. And, you know, people say, you know, can say you're crazy or whatever, but there's a lot of people that have that concept. Go ahead, Mom.
Yeah. I'm just thinking when bombing at the World Trade, that was when we were all on the WLIB.
Yeah.
And, I remember that when that happened, I'm trying to think, There was a first thing that happened, and I think it was in the basement of the World Trade or something like that. Do you remember that?
That was in 1993.
That was in 1993. Okay. Now, do you remember that? Well,
yeah.
I remember that they thought that people were going into the I don't know if it was a basement or something of the World Trade. Okay. Now, one time, where we were living at that time, there was commotion on the street because people were coming to see a family that was living not too far from us because they had delivered something to the World Trade Center on that day or something. Fast forward to the World Trade. Fast forward to the World Trade. When we woke up that day of the bombing, you know, the World Trade.
It was
2001
now.
Oh, it took me, right, later on, you know. I got a call, watching it on television. We saw this, and my daughter was, you know, in the process of flying back from Bermuda to, you know, New Jersey. And I called her as soon as I saw the plane hit World Trade. I picked up the phone because I was watching television that day. And I picked up the phone and called her and said, go to the airport and get your, you know, your ticket change coming in next week because it's going to be shut down there at the airport. And also, if you don't get this done today, you probably won't be able to get into the United States for, you know, several months or something. She did, and that's what happened. But at the same time, you know, I couldn't get him out of our driveway. Lo and behold, I got a phone call. This is funny, but it was amusing in a way. From a friend of mine over at, I think that battle now is over with
Channel 4.
It's 7.
NBC. That battle is on NBC.
Yeah, she's
at
on NBC Channel 4.
Is that NBC? Okay. I thought it was Channel 7 now. But anyway, so she called me on the phone, and she said, Kate, she said, I'm trying to get to you. And I said, what are you talking about? And this was the day that happened. She said, well, I can't get beyond a certain point on your street because the police persons are blocking it off. And lo and behold, they were looking at this family that was suspicious in whatever they were doing, and they had blocked the whole street off.
Yeah.
So I remember that day, you know, so I won't forget that. But
right. It was two separate bombings.
That's
1993,
right.
And the other one was 2001. And
right.
The reason why, the first one was 93 because of the bomb, you remember when, of course, the bomb was planted in one of the sub-parking basements in the World Trade Center.
Right.
So,
I
remember specifically because I was in Buffalo, New York, doing a play at the time. And I was watching the news because this bombing went in the World Trade Center. And they said they tracked some of the accomplices to a place in New Jersey. Okay, so my ears perk up. I'm watching this on CNN. And this is the town called Maplewood, New Jersey. And I was like, you know, that's where we grew up. And then this is the street.
Yeah.
So they have a shot of the street, and it's down the street from my house. So that's when I called my mom. I was like, whoa, Mom, what's going on? And that's when, you know, to relate to what you were just saying, you know, the FBI and people couldn't come down the block. Now, let me go back a little further and let you know that house, those people from that region of the world moved into years when we first moved up in that area in Maplewood. There was a guy that lived there. His name was Kenny, I believe. He was a Vietnam War vet that was paralyzed. We all used to hang in the park. So Kenny was a nice guy, and so we knew him from being over there. He would come in the park and hang in there, and we were kids there. Fast forward, as I got a little older in my 20s, Kenny was long gone, and I happened to be in the park one day with my nephew, and I noticed that these people, you could go to get to the park through your backyard. So where these people lived also, they could walk to the park through their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to notice that there were people from a different part of the world, because some of the women had a headdress. The gentleman looked to be of Middle Eastern or that region of the world. And I was like, oh, okay, and they have little kids. And one little kid was running around. Everybody had kind of left him, and he kind of got out, was in the park. And my nephew said, Uncle, you know, this little kid is, you know, he's kind of lost. I said, well, take him over there where he is. So he lifted the kid up and took him over there. So that's why it stayed in my mind to notice these people. So now all these years, and that was probably in the mid to late 80s at that time. So now, fast forward to 93, some of these people that were living there might have been responsible for the bombing then. And then also when you fast forward to 2012, once again it's happened at the same place, hits the same time. I had my youngest sister used to work on Wall Street and used to take the path into New York. I remember Christian was working in New York on Wall Street when she first graduated law school.
Yep.
So it kind of, you know, you kind of get this thing like it's a little bit personal. You know, you want to kind of come go see those guys, you know? So
funny.
You know,
but,
so it's
I mean,
really.
The deal is that, you know, the thing is that at the time, was there any empirical evidence linking them to the actual bombing? Did anybody ever come up with that or what?
No, but they were looking at it. They were looking at it. And that's what I heard. But, you know, after that, you know, I just didn't think of it anymore or tried not to think of it anymore. But it certainly was, it was, you know, really kind of scary at first. And
but it just goes to show you never know.
You know what was happening with that. I mean, we could see it from, we saw the smoke and everything from where we were because we were right across the river. You know, that
right.
was down
right.
Yeah. It was a beautiful, quite a, you know, scary situation.
Well, I remember working in 1993, but for some reason, the 2001 bombing had more of an impact because I was doing mornings on the station, on both stations at the time, and I'll never forget Mark Rowley and I did about 15 to 16 hours because no one could get in and we couldn't get home, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of those things. And I'll never forget, at halfway during the broadcast, they put on a tape because we just ran out of things to say. And we went downstairs to get something to eat. And Park Avenue, you could see people walking up from Lower Manhattan. They looked like zombies. I mean, ashen-faced, all sorts of debris.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was just amazing. I don't think I've ever lived through anything like that, you know, in my life.
Yeah.
I was never in the military,
game.
But
that
it's
was
amazing.
A bad game. Really?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, so we were there. So unfortunately that had happened. But anyway, what else are we going to be talking about? What about Sanders? You know, I like him. I like him. I really, really, really like him. I like what he says. I like the programs that he is interested in following up on and what he's going to do. I don't know if it's really going to go through that he will become the next president. But he has a good chance, I think. What do you both think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, listen, because he's from Brooklyn, I'm a little – I side with him a little bit, but I still think, and I did see both the victory speech and Hillary's speech yesterday. If you may notice, Sanders spoke longer than Hillary and clearly spoke longer than Trump. And it's not to say that I don't see the passion, but somehow Sanders is resonating with this young crowd. And I don't understand, I mean, when people look at Hillary's history, I just don't know why they don't see, I mean, especially the young folks, they're not even thinking about gender. They don't care whether there's a female the next president or not, you know. I don't know. I mean, that shouldn't be the foremost issue, but I would think it would be a refreshing change for this country. After having the first African-American, of course, Sanders is Jewish. If he were to get it, he'd be the first Jew. But I don't know. You know, I just hope the Democrats don't get lost in the sauce because I've talked to a couple of my talk show buddies on other stations, and the thinking is that the White House is going to go back in Republican hands, and I would hate to see that happen. Especially after what Eric just said a moment ago, because I had forgotten about George H.W. with his voodoo economics, and then the sun comes along and brings about the Great Depression in my lifetime, and as far as Jeb Bush is concerned, I hear he was the most articulate and the brightest of all three, but. I'm sorry, his family has already created such a firewall of dirt, you know, and that's probably why he's not doing any better in the polls, you know, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, I mean, Donald Trump had really did a job on him, and also the way he kind of, you know, I think Jeb kind of thought that it was going to be easier for him, because you could tell by his body language and the way the expressions on his face early on in the campaign that he seemed to be a little bit disgusted with the fact that he was being challenged as much as he was. Like, it was almost like he assumed it was going to be him and Hillary, and it was kind of surprising.
Yeah.
I don't think he really wanted to be president.
No, I think he wanted to be president really bad. I think he wanted to be president before W, and he was probably the sharper of the two brothers, but since W was the oldest, he let kind of, you know, got the word, now let your brother go first.
Mm-hmm.
So, to have a protege like Marco Rubio, who was able to, in one of the early debates, really take a shot and make him look bad. And I want to finish. I didn't finish my point about Marco Rubio because I hear a lot of people acting like he's an impressive guy. he doesn't strike me as very impressive at all. I think that he was fit a certain type that they were looking for at the time, a young guy. They're trying to get ahead of a demographic, a Hispanic demographic. However, he is a white Hispanic, a white Cuban, nonetheless. And I think that he fits that demographic for them, you know, and he's talking a lot of very conservative stuff. And I think that at that time they were trying to push Marco as their answer to get ahead of the growing demographic of Latinos in this country. I think that's why he got a lot of the props that he did. But he's clearly, to me, he's not a bright guy. I'm sure he's bright, but I'm not impressed with him as much as people say, well, he's a smart guy. If you were smart, you wouldn't repeat the same thing over and over again the other night. And from what I heard, what they were saying is that you can have a mantra that you're trying to drill into the heads of people, but they were saying he just kept saying it with no correlation to the conversation at hand. It was just kind of it was kind of abstract coming in. So that's why Chris Christie, I guess, was able, I mean, Wayne, like, obviously you watched the debate. That's why Chris Christie was able to cut him down, right?
Yeah, he took it for a touchdown, man. I mean, Christie was worse than the Bronco defense, you know, during the Super Bowl. Christie just marched all over him. And, I mean, as much as I hate Christie, I thought he did the party well by pointing out how vulnerable Rubio was. And then Rubio got on the tube the next day, acting like as if that was all intentional. But he had to admit it was his worst performance. And he's out of it, you know. It's just to Christie, you know, it's just a shame that he didn't pick up any flies in the process. But, you know, Christie shot himself in the foot a long time ago. And you mentioned the George Washington Bridge thing, and Eric, you call him a blowhard. I tell you, I was listening to Ron Cubian and what's his name from the Guardian Angels last week, and they referred to him as Shamu, and I died laughing. I couldn't believe it, you know.
They did what? Say it again?
No, they referred to Christie as the whale in Disney World Shamu.
Oh, no.
What was that you just said?
Well,
the whale.
Oh,
nasty, nasty.
Yeah, and he looks like a whale. So, you know. I tell you. I hope you can get Ron on one day. You know, you said you were going to have him come on.
He's talking to him, sure, and he said sure. But, you know, I think every time I called, he was so busy. So if you're busy two or three times, you know, you're not going to get another call from me. But he's very bright, very nice. But he is involved with so much stuff over there. I don't see him how he even runs his office, really. Because, you know, he's a busy
I wonder
guy.
About that, too.
Yeah, he's
I
a
wonder
busy
about
guy.
That.
But, I admire him because the fact that he's very involved, you know, in the movement, so to speak. And, you know, he won't let things go until he gets some answers. You know, but Wayne, you know, I'm looking at this book. Yeah, I want to go into this right now. And I had talked about going to Taylor before. Do you remember I was talking about her?
Yeah.
She's an author, writer,
right.
And she's a friend, and she is probably one of the most, most intelligent women I have talked to in a long time. And the name of her book, you know, it came out some time ago. I forget the year, and because I talked about it before, but now I wanted to explain to people because I have had a few people ask about it. And the name of it is the Jalamuso's Drum. And I told people that a Jalamuso is someone who is like a griot. They tell the stories of life. They have the stories and they will tell them to people and they become a Jalamuso because of the fact they are like griots. And she mentions in her book, the first person that I was impressed, well, there are a whole lot of people in this book, but Eartha Kitt. She mentions that Eartha Kitt was a self-educated woman, and she recorded when she went on tour, and she spent most of her time reading Greek philosophy and all that sort of thing. And she was very good friends with James Dean, who she called Jamie. He was very heartbroken and depressed when she found out about his untimely death. But she didn't realize until after, you know, that she had. What did she do? She couldn't understand why. She was talking to Lady Bird Johnson. That's it. That's the story I wanted to get to. She was blacklisted. This I'm talking about Eartha Kitt now. She went to Europe. She was blacklisted after she attended a luncheon at the White House and gave her honest opinion to a question posed by Lady Bird Johnson. She suggested, Eartha Kitt suggested, that America should not be sending her young people to war. And it was reported that her comments made Lady Bird Johnson cry. Wow, what is this?
Wow.
She made her cry. And then Kitt was shocked when she found out that that someone is not always supposed to voice her opinion to those in power. So what happened was that she didn't understand why we are told that we have freedom of speech and freedom of expression. Congress is ruled by the people. The president is only the president. Does he have the right to get rid of someone who does not agree with him? And she said that, I thought that the American way is that you have a right to disagree. And she was hurting inside. She was crying inside. And she had been rejected by her own government because she did not agree. And what had happened was that she didn't realize that she had offended the First Lady. And she received a call from Dr. King after her luncheon with Lady Bird Johnson. Martin Luther King called, said, we are proud of you, Eartha. You did what all of America wants to do. Thank God that someone did it for us. And you should really be the one to have the Peace Prize. We are proud of you. Well, he remembers the phone call. And then what happened was that, she received a phone call. Now listen to this. This is Eartha Kitt receiving this phone call. This person says, Seymour Hersh. This is Seymour Hersh from the New York Times. We need your permission to print what is found in your CIA file. According to the file, President Johnson had me put out of work in America in 2 hours. According to the files, he called on the media to erase me. The FBI could not find anything subversive. Now, you know, Eartha Kitt was not subversive. She was a singer.
Exactly.
But she didn't give up.
Yeah.
She was blackballed, okay?
Made the First Lady cry.
Yeah, so, you know.
She made his wife cry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you get the white Southern ladies, you know, you have to be very careful in those days. Now, another person to be honored by the French government and given a military funeral was Josephine Baker. And Glenda says that she was a Jalamuzo. She was a griot. And the reason why she chose Josephine Baker was that Josephine Baker was, and she was a famous singer. I'm sure a lot of older people would probably remember her. She lived in Europe.
Right.
She was the first American woman to be honored by the French government and given a military award with a 21-gun salute. And she was instrumental in helping the French resistance in World War II. And she spoke out about racism in America. Well, this isn't what you did in those days, it seems. So she was the only woman to speak at the March on Washington. I didn't know this. I thought this And I asked a few friends, I said, was Josephine Baker there during that march? Because I was there during the march for Washington. I remember a lot of people were there. Were you there, Wayne?
No, that was, I hate to say it, it was before my time. I was a child.
You're thinking about the Million Man March.
But you're talking about Josephine Baker. I think she'd already passed. I mean,
well,
I wish she spoke to the one.
I don't remember seeing her.
But the one in 1963. I think she might have been there for that, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
she was the only woman to speak out at the March on Washington and was asked by Coretta Scott King after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King to become the leader and spokeswoman for the movement.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, you know. And Josephine Baker's autobiography. And these are really interesting things. And Glenda Taylor has captured all this. She did quite a lot of research on this. I find this book one of the most fascinating, historical, presentations that I have read. Now, I read it before, and I keep reading it because I find out something new all the time. And she says that African-American griots, the women are called griots, that although some may dispute the accuracy of their story, say that memory fades and changes the truth as time passes. One can gain insight as to how events affect a child's mind. So children remember the anguish of their parents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, going to another person that she says was a griot, and who spoke out was Lena Horne, singer, actress, civil rights activist, who was blacklisted in the 1950s because of her stand on civil and human rights. I didn't know that. You know, and then she also talks about...
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, not only about Lena Horne, but Sissy Houston. Sissy Houston was a part of this whole, she considers a griot. So because Sissy spoke out, and she had a famous family, and, you know, which of the names were the drinkers in York, New Jersey, famous family. Sissy, of course, was Whitney's mother. And there are a number of other people that I wanted to go into. Oh, I really wanted to get to this person because this is a person. Nina Simone sang about the relationship and love, okay? And she was the one who penned the song, Mississippi Goddamn, okay? And she wrote that after struggling with the pain of finding out about the church bombing that killed the four little girls.
Wow.
Okay, so that's how she was. And, of course, Nina Simone was known as the High Priestess of Soul.
And
then it comes to the person that I really want to talk about. Let me see. And that is Whoopi Goldberg. Whoopi Goldberg is one of the brightest women. I'm telling you, if you listen to her on The View, Whoopi, you know, stands her ground. And she's extremely bright. She's an actress, a comedian, a singer, songwriter, talk show, radio show host, television and film producer. Her award includes the NAACP Image Award, the Golden Globe Award, the Oscar, the Tony Award, a Grammy Award. Now, she's multifaceted, and she's had two successful one-woman shows on Broadway and performed in over 150 films. She is an author of a children's book and an autobiography titled Whoopi Goldberg, the Youngest Jalamuso. She was born in 1955. Ooh. So Whoopi is on the ball. You know, if you listen to The View, if you see her on The View, she is, I'm telling you, she knows a whole lot, speaks her mind, is outspoken, and dares people to question what she knows to be true. She will put you in a place in a minute about history. Okay?
Yeah, so, I was just reading something about her in the show that apparently she's giving the people at ABC, or they're giving her, I should say, a hard time, and that she was threatening to quit. I don't know if you saw that. It was on the internet the other day that she was thinking about leaving the show. I think that would be a mistake, but
that
then again,
that would be a disaster. I think that show would flop. That would be a disaster.
Yeah, it would be.
It would be a disaster. Really, she's the only reason why I watch it.
I think
that
she's the only reason why a lot of people watch still. You know, I mean, I don't know, it may sound a little biased. I like Joy Behar also. But the bottom line is that I think Whoopi carries that show. And, I don't remember exactly when she started. I mean, the show was already successful. But after she took over, that was it. You know, she's like a picture
Barbara,
there.
Yeah, what's her name? Barbara
Walters.
When Barbara would kind of try to phase out of being the anchor so much, and they needed, that's when they kind of shook it up. And, you know, Rosie O'Donnell, that's when Rosie came on the first time, and Rosie didn't work out too well. And then, you know, that's when they tried to do that shakeup, and that's when Whoopi came on. And shortly after, I guess you had Sherry Shepherd came on before Whoopi. But, you know, there's kind of a certain perspective that I think that I've noticed that people – that have been in high, African Americans have been able to achieve high levels of position in our society, like a lot of actors like Whoopi, Eddie Murphy. They've seen a lot of stuff, and they've experienced a lot in terms of being at high levels of acceptance in our society and in their industry. But I think what they also still begin to see is still the racism that's in our society, because even at the levels that they're at, there is still a certain level of racism. You know, they don't get the respect that their white peers get. And you can tell it in kind of their attitudes after being in the business for a while. You know, they're kind of over it a little bit, you know, and they kind of understand it. I'm trying to make money and do some fun work that I want to do. And I definitely sense that Whoopi, that she's seen it all in this business and understands the racism in the country and the business that she's chosen. and I know that Eddie, from conversations I've had, that people that know him, and I know him, you know, superficially, or Eddie Murphy, I know him as an acquaintance, but I know that I feel that he has a similar feeling in terms of, you know, really recognizing, you know, the limits in our society. And if you just look at it, how the first black president was treated, you can see that it's still very close to the top. I was just reading something on the internet a little while ago, which was an article was saying that how Maria Sharapova, her endorsement, she makes more money in endorsements than Serena does.
Uh-huh.
Even though their record is like Serena beat her like 18 times out of 20, she's a better tennis player.
Yeah.
But Maria Sharapova makes more money in endorsement. What's up?
I have a story. Sports Illustrated. Sports Illustrated this year appointed or chose Serena as player of the year in Sports Illustrated. I just went and, you know, Googled it the other day. And she made a speech at the end of, you know, when she was receiving, you know, the award. And that speech, everybody should Google it. Sports Illustrated, year, she was chosen Woman of the Year. She took time to do the speech, and she told what she went through, what she and her sister, you know, went through with the racism and all that, you know, and she took time, and she spoke of her anger. And then at the end of her speech, she said, she quoted Maya Angelou and said, "And still I rise."
Right, exactly, yeah.
Powerful.
I mean,
everybody
should
Google it and see and hear that speech in Sports Illustrated this year. She was chosen as Tennis Person of the Year.
And, I mean, Serena has her own physical beauty, too. I mean, to rival that of, you know, the other woman that Eric was talking about. I mean, I'm not saying that you have to go all out of your way, you know, pose nude or what have you. But, I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, I think America's taste is changing. I think there is greater acceptance, but still there is that glass ceiling that all of us reach, you know. I was watching The View this morning, and I heard Cuba Gooding Jr. Make some comments about his portrayal of O.J. Simpson, talk about the Oscars and stuff like that, and it was pretty interesting. Again, you still get the sense that we're only going but so far, no matter whatever accomplishments we've achieved, and you know, it's just shameful. I mean, I don't know where the boycott has gone at this point, but it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, by the time the telecast takes place.
What are you talking about? What boycott? Oh, the Oscars.
Oscars. The Oscars, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know? And,
I was going to say Marlon Wayans had a very interesting take on it. He was like, it's nothing new. It's their party. It's been that way forever. So why now do we expect, you know, you go to somebody's party, you'll get mad because they don't want to, you know, give you the prize when it's their party.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you make your own award. That's why we have our own, we recognize our own. And also, too, the thing is, too, I mean, everybody understands the real thing is it's business. It means more money for your movie that you made. It equates itself to business. And that's understandable. We all know that. But, you know, you understand what it is. It is what it is. That's a reflection of America as a whole. So if America as a whole is going to be treating black people as second-class citizens, and if the president gets dissed, surely you Negroes that are actors, you're going to get dissed.
Oh, please. Thank you.
And, you know, for someone to get up because your husband didn't get an award and now you want to make a big deal out of it, okay, you should have made a big deal about the fact that they were making slave movies all the time and giving awards about that, if you really wanted to speak up about something.
Yeah. I was just going to say, no disrespect. I'm glad she said something, because sometimes you just have to be reminded of what goes on.
Right. I was just going to say that I agree with the sentiment, but it just, you know, I think if you make the sentiment after the fact, and when it appears that you have that you're only making it because it's affecting directly you, now you're noticing the problem, and you know,
right?
Knowing the type of people that Jada and Will are, I'm quite sure that that's not the case. But it, and I totally know exactly what she's talking about, as we all do. But it,
yeah,
it does a little bit of disservice to your argument. It seems like it, you have a self interest at stake.
It's self-serving position, you know.
Right.
And I don't know. I didn't see that film, but I heard he was good. But I heard he was no Jamie Foxx compared to what Foxx did with Ray Charles, you know.
Well, I heard
I don't know.
I heard that he wasn't good. And but that will remain to be seen. But as we're going out, I'll tell you what is good. That Star Wars is doggone good. We went to see it. I took my mom and my nephew to see it last week. It was a $100 movie day, but it was well worth it.
Listen, I didn't understand what was going on.
It was 3D.
I was wearing these glasses, putting them on and off, you know. My grandson is excited. Eric's excited. All I know is a whole gang of noise. People flying and all.
Wow.
Star Trek, right?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Star Trek generation. You know, those movies came out 77, 78, when that's my generation. We were in high school.
Yeah.
You know, Star Trek came out, and it was on from there. 79, you know, and so now, I mean, that's like, what, 30, almost, well, you know, a lot of years.
I was married to a Trekkie, and I think that led to our divorce, because she'd always want to watch Star Trek, I want to watch sports. You know? It was just one of those things.
And that could be a problem. The Trekkies, I'm kind of a semi-Trekkie, too. We used to watch that, my sisters and I, all the time, and that could be a problem, you know, because Star Trek is it's a comforting thing. You know, when you see these old TV series, and I like a lot of these TV stations now, they run a lot of the old school TV series.
Mm-hmm.
I called them and told them to turn on Aspire Network because they were running old episodes of the Flip Wilson show.
Yeah.
But
funny.
There's a certain level of comfort that you have when you see these shows growing up.
What channel? I'm sorry, Eric. When does that come on?
On the Aspire Network, which is a network I believe that's owned by Magic Johnson. And it came on this morning. It was like this morning about 9 o'clock. They were running a little mini marathon, about three or four episodes of Flip Wilson. One episode that I happened to see was Joe Namathon. And this was in 1971, this episode that originally aired. So it was the height of Joe Namath's career. And he had a young Lily Tomlin on, a young George Carlin. And it was really, you know, I mean, that's the case now on the internet and with TV and where it is. We have so many channels nowadays that you can see, you know, not only turn to classic movies, but you can see your old TV series from back in the day. And
school
days.
Right.
Well, yes.
School days.
Yeah.
And Sam Jackson.
I appreciate that, Mom, but you know, I'm talking about, you know, the really kind of old classics. But going out. That's what we want to say. We've got a minute and 30 left, so we had a good show. Mr. Wayne Gilman.
Thank you, sir.
Legendary newsman that you are. I'd like to say goodnight to you. And if you'd like to say goodnight to your adoring public,
good night. It's always a pleasure, Kay and Eric. Honest to God.
It's
fun. I miss this. We need to expand it.
That's right. Wayne, thank you and good night. Mom, once again, here we are going on out. Want to say to everybody, Blog Talk Radio, Kay Thompson Live on the blogtalkradio.com/KayThompsonLive every Wednesday live at 8 to 9 p.m. Or you can listen to our shows, which are also archived. As you know, I've started putting the dates on, so you can go in and listen to what specific show you want to listen to. My name is Eric Payne. I am the son, and you are?
Kay Thompson. Join us again every Wednesday for Kay Thompson Live. Well, I'm from 8 until 9 p.m.
on Wednesdays. Thank you, everybody. Don't forget to vote. Peace. See you later.